Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 302, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. So I did mention I wanted to play something else. Because to me, from John Mara, because I think John Mara just came off poorly in this press conference. I respect John Mara. I think he gives you mostly what you want from an owner. I mean, it's a cap sport, and he's willing to spend the cap money. I mean, that's not even an issue in the NFL. He's willing to spend the money. And he wants to win desperately. And he doesn't do anything to necessarily embarrass the organization, but right now it feels like he's a problem. And I think even he would have to, and it sounds like he certainly understands that he hasn't done a good job. I mean, he literally, as how I took it, he doesn't want to make a decision again. He talked about hating going through this, hating going through the questions. But I think he the idea of having to hire another GM and coach is just... After what he's been through the last 6 or 7 years, I mean, it's just the last thing he wants to do. And ultimately, I felt like he should have presided and presented more of an argument in favor of these two guys he's keeping after a 3-win season than, you know, I can't even tell you we're better. I can't even tell you we're going in the right direction, but I sure hope so. I don't want to make a decision. Is pretty much, and sometimes, listen, sometimes in life, if, you know, right? Didn't the great Yogi Berra said, if you come to a fork in the road, take it? This is like, if you come to a fork in the road, don't take it. Just, you know, don't make a decision. Sometimes doing nothing when you don't know what to do can be something. But I needed more from him. And I'm not sure with the way he's the nature of, I need to be happier this time next year. They better do something because my patience is wearing thin. I mean, those might be things that he feels they need to hear and need to be said publicly. But they counter the way he should be feeling if you're going to decide to keep them. So I don't understand where he's coming from. And another thing that kind of jumped out at me, like that he's not seeing the big picture, is this quote when asked about tanking at the end of the season.
If I had thought that we were tanking either one of those games, I would have fired everybody. We are never going to do that in this organization as long as I'm standing on this side of the grass.
Did you watch the game on Sunday? Now, I'm not saying that Brian Daboll and or Joe Shane openly tried to lose the football game, but they sure didn't care about winning it. That's why everybody left that game knowing Joe Shane was safe. Now, I want to tank. I completely understand the owner who doesn't. I'm not going to get on John Mara. The point of this isn't to say, hey, John, you're being silly and short-sighted. Why would you not want to tank? It's about the betterment of the franchise, blah, 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 blah. That's my opinion. If I were an owner, I wouldn't have a problem with tanking necessarily. I want what's best for my franchise. And if I believe losing a game is what's best for my franchise, then that's what I would want to do. That's how I feel as a fan. That's how I would feel as an owner. I'm not openly go out there and lose it necessarily, but, and again, I can't put myself in that position. It's hard for me to think of being an owner of a football team, but I would like to think that I would feel the same way, that what's best for my franchise is best for my franchise, plain and simple. But I'm not trying to get on John Mara for not wanting to tank. I respect that thought process. I respect the idea that he would fire anyone who would tank. If that's the case, you should fire everyone, because they certainly didn't play the game to win, John. Like, I'm sorry, did we not see that? Did we not see how he handled that game with all the substitutions and not having Malik Nabers on the field in some of the most critical plays of the game? Like, did you not see? The Giants might not have been quote-unquote tanking or trying to lose, but they did not do everything in their power to win. And then you're getting into semantics. So even that, Like, just so many things about this news conference just made me feel uneasy about the decision-making and thought process of the New York Giants owner. He did not make me feel better about the situation at all. At all. If his desire was to come off as someone as frustrated as me and as frustrated as you as a Giant fan, that's the only thing he accomplished. But he sure didn't make me feel better about his ability to lead them out of it. And to hear, you know, oh, yeah, no. If I thought they were tanking any of those games. It's third down a score at the end of the game, and Malik Nabers isn't on the field. Jalin Hyatt is. They're playing offensive linemen they told you are not guards at guard. They're playing everybody under the sun on defense, bringing them in, bringing them out. Like, it was treated as a preseason game. So, I mean, I guess we're parsing words on what tanking is because I don't think they coached to openly lose the game, but some of the fourth down decision-making, I mean, that game didn't seem as a game that the coach was desperately trying to win to keep the owner's sensibility of never tanking. That's for sure. It felt like I'm a safe coach. I'm going to observe some players. I'm going to treat this like a preseason game. And ultimately, I know it's better to have the third or fourth pick than the seventh or eighth. That's what it felt like to me. 888-808-1019. So, again, the Giants, ultimately, I feel like the best decision was made. The owner didn't make me feel any sort of confidence at all that he's come to that decision for the right reasons. Vernon in Newark. What's up, Vernon?
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Good. How are
Thanks
you, buddy?
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I'm doing good. I just want to talk about a couple of things right quick while I got time.
Sure.
People forget that Shador Sanders played at Colorado, and the guy, the quarterback from Alabama with Roll Tide, the competition level is totally different.
Yeah.
And truth be told, let's talk about the elephant in the room. If Shador's last name wasn't Sanders, would we really be talking about him?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't think it's just about his last name, because there's been other, you know, famous, and it's not like he's the only one. I know his prime has really become a storyline here, and what's going on with him in Colorado and his son and coming over from Jackson State and everything. But no, I think he's genuinely viewed as one of the two best quarterbacks in this NFL draft class right at the moment. I do think that. Certainly better than Milroe.
I can go with that. I can go with that, to be transparent with you. But also with Brian Daboll, I felt like he coached his butt off those last two games because he probably felt like, hey, you know what? If the Giants are going to get the number one pick, they're not going to – and they're going to get rid of me, whoever's going to take my place is going to have to get number four. I know that may sound crazy and far-fetched, but I just think the NFL has got real political. It's like the WWE now.
Well, I don't know. I think there's been cases of that. I don't know if Mayo felt that way. I don't know if he knew he was going to get fired right after the game. And certainly, you know, he played Milton, the quarterback they drafted in the sixth round, and nobody expected him to go out there and play as well as he did and beat the Buffalo Bills. But maybe that was a scenario there. Certainly a couple of years ago, with Lovie Smith with the Houston Texans, it felt like that was – they knew he was on his way out, and that was kind of like a final screw you to the franchise by winning that last game and taking them out of the first overall pick, although it's ended up benefiting them. Although, I don't know, the way that Bryce Young has played the last, you know, half of this season, he's starting to look like a quarterback worthy of being at the top of the draft and probably had a certainly better second half of the season than Stroud did. I mean, that's how well he played at the end of the year. And the Texans kind of floundered at times this year. So we'll see if in the long, long run it ended up helping the Texans. But certainly in the short run, it felt like they got the better quarterback. So you never know. But no, I don't think Daboll coached his ass off at all last week. I looked at that game completely different than you did. I mean, against the Colts, sure. But this last game against Philadelphia? going for it on 4th and 7, the first drive of the game at the 50-yard line. It felt like whatever. It felt like in that moment to start the game, it felt like whatever happens, it's fine. We give them back the ball at midfield and let them go down and score a touchdown. That's fine. I'm going to try and just, you know, I'm going to be aggressive here. Why not? I don't think he was trying to be unsuccessful on that 4th and 7th play. I'm sure if he had his pick, he would have, you know, gotten the first down on that 4th and 7. But just attempting it at the start of the game and give them the short field like that with a young quarterback and put him in that with the first ever start for the Philadelphia quarterback, like to give him that short field to start the game on a 4th and 7 seemed like an interesting decision. Not having your best offensive weapon on the field in your biggest offensive plays with the game on the line seems like an interesting decision. Substituting all different kinds of defensive backs and everything, it just seemed like interesting decisions. And I don't know if I would put them with coaching your ass off. Stuart in Brooklyn, what's up, Stu?
Yeah, good morning, C-Mac.
What's up, buddy? How are
you? Finally, the season is over. Now we can see what they do. But I don't know. I know John Mara didn't want to make another change because he feels like he has made so many wrong decisions lately.
Yeah.
It's like he just didn't want to go there and do it again. They would criticize him all over again for doing the wrong thing. I mean, I don't think he wants to go there.
Well, I mean, I guess. I don't know about getting criticized because he's getting heavily criticized for this decision right now. No, I don't.
More so.
I don't think so.
But, you know, it's like.
Not right. Not in the moment he wouldn't get criticized more so. Maybe in 2 years he'd get criticized again for making the wrong decision. But right now he'd be. I mean, Pat Leonard is saying the franchise is completely lost. And, you know, I don't know. If, you know, because we hearken back, and thank you for the call, Stu. We hearken back to Tom, like we've referenced the Tom Coughlin situation a lot and where the franchise is differently, where Tom Coughlin was trying to justify getting a fourth year after making back-to-back playoff appearances. And it's like, wow, you know, that was a coach in peril back then. And now this coach is safe off of 2 years of 6-3 wins. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And it's, yeah, I mean, they're in a different spot. They're in a different scenario. He's hired and fired a ton of coaches. It's not what he wants to do. And you know what? It's not the worst argument in the world at some point to say, I have to have convictions in my decisions. That's why I wish he would just come out and have more conviction in his decision. Because I don't think it's unreasonable. Now, people might think it doesn't matter. You got the wrong guy. But if you were to say, look, Brian Daboll in particular was coach of the year, I felt like we finally had like a competent head coach for the first time in years. He changed the feeling around the franchise, albeit for 1 year. He won a road playoff game, which is hard to do in the NFL. He hasn't had a quarterback. Daniel Jones got hurt 2 years ago. He still managed to win games down the stretch with Tommy DeVito against Green Bay. Against the Philadelphia Eagles. I know they didn't need it, but they didn't need this game last week and we got beat. He won games against Green Bay. He beat Bill Belichick. He found a way to beat Philadelphia. Like they played hard for him, and he was doing that with Tommy DeVito. This year was an out-and-out disaster. Can't argue that. But you know what? I hired him for a reason. He's never had that young coach, that young quarterback, and at some point, I have to have convictions in my belief. I believed in Brian Daboll. I hired him for a reason. I hired Joe Shane for a reason. I believe in these two guys. And whether it's the first year with Brian Daboll and now the last draft with Joe Shane, they've shown me enough where I'm tired of giving up on my belief after a couple of years. I made a decision, and I'm sticking with it because I believe in it. Like, I don't think that's a crazy thought process. Like, we've gone through, it was 2 years of Ben McAdoo, I had to fire him. 2 years of Pat Shurmur, I had to fire him. 2 years of Joe Judge, I had to fire him. We've been going through coaches. It hasn't worked for me. It hasn't worked for the franchise. And I hired these guys for a reason. And they were in good standing around the NFL for a reason. And despite the lack of success the last 2 years, I still believe in them, and I'm going to stand firm on my decision-making and thought process for the first time in the last three times. I don't think that's crazy, and I would have rather have heard that than just, oh, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's not been good, and I can't even tell you things are going good. I can't even tell you I believe. I can't even tell you like that the roster's better. I can't tell you this. I can't tell you that, but I'm, you know, I still kind of believe in them. And then you just juxtapose that against the confidence that the GM shows. Like, listen to some of the quotes from Joe Shane when asked about, like, a playoff mandate. Because, obviously, Merritt, they were asked, does he need to win? Well, my patience is running thin, and, I better be in a better mood next year than I am this year. Like, he's as much as he's bringing him back, he's showing very little faith and very little confidence in the idea of them doing a good job or moving forward with them, despite bringing them back. Like, it felt like there was hardly any confidence, that it was just about the idea of, you know, sometimes you can't just continue to make changes and we need some stability in the organization. That's the biggest thing John Mara said, really, and the biggest reason he gave. And yet Joe Shane talks like he'd had no doubt.
No. Again, we got to continue to build it the right way. And if we have a really good roster and, you know, you get close. And again, I think John said it to you guys earlier, you know, progress. And we're at three wins. We didn't make progress in the direction we wanted to this year, and it's not good enough, and it starts with me, and I understand that.
But I want to play that again because I want to the question was, do you have a playoff mandate?
No. Again, no. We got to continue to build it the right way.
Yeah. And No, I don't. And then he talks about playoff mandates as if that John Mara would be foolish to give him one.
To have an ultimatum, you make the playoffs or you don't, that gets in a little bit of the question earlier, like, if you know, that changes things, but that's not it. Like, John believes in the people in the building and Steve, and, you know, they're giving us the ability to, you know, to build it the right way.
Yeah, he believes in us. He believes in us. Well, he spent 20 minutes talking like he didn't believe much in you. No. Playoff mandate. And honestly, I mean, listen, maybe that'll change things. He's not going to, it's so starkly different. And maybe, listen, he's just trying to project confidence. I don't know. And I wish the owner would have done it on some level. Because, again, I'd rather be wrong than, and I'm not calling John Mara ignorant or this decision ignorant, but I'd rather be wrong than indecisive. I'd rather have the owner just tell me this was the decision, this is the thought process, and I believe in it deeply, as opposed to, I don't know. I hope I'm doing the right thing. We'll find out. Like, that doesn't instill confidence, and it makes me open it up to the worst-case scenario, which is the idea of getting a young quarterback and moving on from Joe Shane and Brian Daboll then. In a year, because you don't win within a very difficult schedule and a very difficult division with a young quarterback. That seems like a recipe for disaster with the young quarterback, and the Giants have done it. You don't have to go back too far. Daniel Jones, the last franchise quarterback they had. They changed coaches on him after year one, after a promising year one with Pat Shurmur's offense. You don't bring in Brian Daboll because he helped develop Josh Allen, to never give him a quarterback, then give him one possibly, and then take it away after a year. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And I just wish the owner, made me feel a little bit more like he had some real confidence in his decision-making. Let's go to E. Frank in Astoria. What's up, E. Frank?
Yeah, what's up, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy?
Yeah, I just want to ask you or insist that maybe you should talk a little bit more about the decision of Woody Johnson of continuing being the Jets owner and who he's going to choose as Jets.
You want me to talk more about the decision of Woody Johnson not to recuse himself from owning the New York Jets?
Yeah, because this has been a brutal season. The only good thing that I see coming out of it is that Zach Wilson as a backup quarterback in Denver has to play the Buffalo Bills there in Buffalo in a wild card game, because winning 5 games and losing 12 was very bad, but it was good because now everyone knows that the Jets needed a severe shakeup because they have not performed to what they expected to, and Aaron Rodgers did not do what he was supposed to do. But I forgive Aaron because he was injured and he was off, and then Zach Wilson had to take over for him, and now this is the result. And I just was wondering what you think should be the new head coach and the new general manager, because Rex Ryan seems to be a guy that's quite, you know, aged and has not been with the Jets for quite a few years. And what do you think? Who should be the general manager?
Well,
who should be the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a definitive answer on who it should be. I mean, I have thoughts on it. And Rex Ryan, I think at this point, I wouldn't go to Rex Ryan. I thought for a brief moment maybe it wouldn't be a terrible idea. I think that would only come with Aaron Rodgers staying, and it doesn't sound like that's what Rex Ryan wants to do. And Rex Ryan's out there confident as hell. I don't know where he gets his confidence. I mean, this dude, he's something else. He's he's very confident he's going to get the job. He's the best guy out there. He loves Ben Johnson. Loves Ben. He's doing a great job calling plays for the Detroit Lions, but he's a better candidate than him for this job. And for what reason? But the list, they have already interviewed Vrabel and Rivera. They have interviews coming up with Rex Ryan, Brian Flores, Josh McCown, Joe Brady, Matt Nagy, Arthur Smith, Brian Greasy, Aaron Glenn, Vance Joseph, and Bobby Slowick. I mean, I think Schefter just is reporting that Mike Greenberg, the assistant GM in Tampa Bay, is going to interview for the Tampa Bay, is going to interview for the GM position possibly. I think in today's NFL, unless you are going to get a Vrabel, which I don't think is going to happen now. I mean, most people feel like he played this beautifully and made sure he interviewed with the Jets immediately and made it clear publicly that he would be interested in the Jet job, because it led to Mayo being fired within an hour of the final game of the season for New England, or within hours at least. And it feels like that's just a fait accompli that he's going to go to New England. Unless you're going to get a guaranteed successful head coach, I think in today's day and age, I want to go to an offensive guy. Like, if you look around the league, like right now, I mean, I guess Quinn is a defensive coach and McDermott's a defensive coach, but like most of the winning is being done by offensive head coaches. And certainly if I'm going to go young or inexperienced, I definitely want to go offensive. I'm going to go coordinator. As much as I respect Glenn and the job he's done in Detroit, and he had a great game plan the other night against Minnesota and his connection to the Jets and everything. I mean, Brian Flores is another guy who would be a defensive coach. I think he's done a pretty good job, but again, not like wasn't very successful against Detroit this year. They've won a lot of games. He disguises blitzes pretty well, and he did a pretty good job in Miami. So I guess I would be open to Brian Flores coming here to be the head coach. I think he's got experience, and he did a good job in Miami for the most part. Not a great job, but a good job. But I would be looking for an offensive head coach. And again, I would be looking to bring Aaron Rodgers back. I think this team, if you get a legitimate head coach in here, you can win football games with this team. I firmly believe that. I think they would have won a lot more football games if they didn't fire Robert Saleh. I do. I think they would have won a lot more football games. The defense fell apart after Robert Saleh left. So right now the Jets have expanded this search to, they are interviewing everybody. And we'll see what they come up with. I would be against some of the names. I definitely would be against at this point now. I would be against Rex Ryan. I would certainly be against Ron Rivera. I'm not the biggest Arthur Smith fan, but again, I do think he's a good offensive coach. I don't think he's a good head coach. I think Josh McCown would be a little bit of a large leap. I understand he was the coach on the field by the end of his career at the quarterback position, and I'm sure he's, you know, a very smart guy. And I think Carolina almost, there were some reports they were going to hire him as the head coach before they brought him on to be the quarterback coach, and now I believe he's in Minnesota. I think that would be a large leap to go from, you know, a quarterback coach to all of a sudden a head coach. You know, Matt Nagy, me and, you know, Fliegelman has been talking to me about Matt Nagy and the idea that it's not the worst. I mean, if you look at his record with crappy quarterbacks, I mean, you know, he was able to win some games. Matt Nagy might not be the as bad a name. It's a name that's brought up and immediately is like, oh, man, I'm not doing that. Like, it's not the worst name in the world. He had a winning record with some lousy quarterbacks. But none of them really excite me. None of them excite me as franchise changers, but they're going to go through the process. I definitely don't like Ron Rivera, and I don't want Rex Ryan. I think Brian Flores is a good candidate. I think Matt Nagy is a better candidate. You know, Fliegelman's kind of convinced me on that. I think Matt Nagy is a better candidate than people think. I mean, again, I think if you get a legitimate head coach in here, it doesn't take a world. I don't think they need, and we'll see if Aaron Rodgers comes back. It sounds like he's definitely gone. A lot of talk of maybe, you know, Pittsburgh looking for a quarterback. I saw JJ on SMY talking about San Francisco. I think there is legs. I don't know about necessarily Aaron Rodgers, but I do think there is legs to moving on from Brock Purdy. I do. I think that coach, I mean, he was the last pick in the draft. Now, he's this conversation about Brock Purdy, I think he's a great player. I'm not trying to diminish his ability. But now, I mean, this is multiple seasons now with nerve issues in his throwing arm. He's going to ask for a lot of money because he's been uber successful. This year was a down year. And I believe the coach, obviously, is one of the better offensive minds in the sport and can get good quarterback play with that roster out of a lot of quarterbacks in this league. So I don't know if Aaron Rodgers necessarily, but I do think you could see a Brock Purdy become available. I do think you could see a different shifting of the quarterback in San Francisco, for sure. So maybe that's a spot. Certainly, I don't think Russell Wilson has shown enough here down the stretch. He had his time, you know, from November through the beginning of December. They really took off a little bit, but he's hit a wall. I don't believe they're going to have a chance in this game against Baltimore, and I think they'll probably move on to the quarterback position from Russell Wilson. That could be a landing spot easily for Aaron Rodgers. But if I'm the Jets, I try and retain him. And obviously Woody Johnson said today, or yesterday now, with New York Post, I believe, that he is going to let that decision be made by the next coach and GM, which is right. Now, we all know the reports of the relationship being frayed between the owner and the quarterback, and I don't know if Rodgers even wants to stay. But if he does, I still think that's the best way to have a winning season next year. You could draft a young quarterback and play, you know, and let him learn under Aaron Rodgers. Like, I don't know who else you're going to... Like, I thought he played really well in that game. He can still throw the ball. He moved a little bit. He threw four touchdown passes under pressure. All four touchdown passes were under pressure. I think it's the first quarterback since 2020 to do it. Like, I still think there's talent and game left for Aaron Rodgers. I do. And I don't know if you're going to find someone. I mean, he pretty much threw 30 touchdown passes and 12 interceptions. Or it was 28 and 11. Like, give me another quarterback you're going to bring in here to add to this team, along with the $40-plus million cap hit that letting Aaron Rodgers go brings, that's going to give you 30 and 10 and almost 4,000 yards. Who's the guy who's going to come in here and do that for you? And how are you going to build your roster by bringing in that guy and having a dead money hit of $40 million to see Aaron Rodgers go play for someone else? Like, I just don't think, like, even though the situation isn't perfect and it hasn't played out well, and maybe, yeah, all things considered, all things being equal, is the best case scenario moving on from him without the $40 million cap hit, maybe. But I still think there's a reason that you can bring him back. I still think it's reasonable that you can have a relationship, continue to build with Garrett Wilson. I don't think that's just some sort of no way you can move forward with Davante Adams, Wilson, and Aaron Rodgers all in the same room. I think you can. And I just don't see a better option for the Jets. So, and if, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. If I'm the GM or the coach, I don't view 1 year of Aaron Rodgers and the way he's played in some of the games down the stretch and the season he gave overall compared to what? You know, wins, we're finding out the Giants, I mean, you know, wins are precious. You're going to come in here with a quarterback you don't know? As opposed to Aaron Rodgers and try and win some games with a talented roster that's going to, you're going to have to make decisions on after this year. I mean, DJ Reed's going to come up this offseason, but you're going to have young players to make decisions on. Who knows what the roster looks like in a couple of years? I still think you can have a talented roster with a talented quarterback and go make a run with Aaron Rodgers. And hey, if you're the coach that breaks the playoff streak, you might buy yourself a little leeway. If you're the GM who breaks the playoff streak, you might buy yourself a little leeway and some brownie points with the organization and the fan base moving forward and into a different quarterback situation. I don't know. It doesn't seem crazy to me. I would rather have the Jets keep Aaron Rodgers, but we'll see what happens. But their coaching search, I mean, I would want an offensive coach unless I'm getting Vrabel, unless, you know, maybe Brian Flores. Unless I'm getting a really established head coach that I know can do it, has done it, has won. Unless I'm doing that, if I'm going the inexperienced or, you know, out of the box kind of hire, I'm going offensive coach. So I could see, you know, I kind of like Josh McCown. I just think it's such a big leap. But he was a very heady player. He played for a lot of different teams. He played under a lot of organizations. He's extremely well thought of. He's a smart guy. He's got the connection with the Jets. Like, I don't think that's a bad hire. I just think right now for the New York Jets, I'm looking for a little more experience than a guy who's only been a quarterback coach. But that's the kind of hire if they're going to go outside the box. I think Matt Nagy isn't the worst decision either. So we'll see. We'll see what they do. But I don't think there's a candidate outside of Vrabel that clearly comes in here and reestablishes a culture of winning right away, or at least that I feel confident would do so. 888-808-1019. Quick break, come back with more of your calls. Maybe a little baseball. We can get to the Knicks, too, who've now lost three in a row. And you know what happens when the Knicks lose three in a row? And you know what happens when the Knicks can't shoot from behind the three-point line? And you know what happens when they look tired defensively? What's the conversation that we will start to have about this coach and about minutes? They've now lost three in a row off the 9-game win streak, and they looked tired last night, and they certainly didn't have their legs underneath them shooting threes. So, yeah, they were down, obviously, a star player in Cap, but to lose their third straight game to an Orlando Magic team that didn't have their top four scorers on them, that's a disappointing loss, probably the worst loss of the year for the Knicks. And out come the Minute Police. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Continue to take your phone calls till 5 o'clock. We'll be right back. Woo! So last night was the I watched a little bit of it, and I'm seeing the clips now. Last night was the first night of WWE Raw on Netflix. I don't know if you're a big wrestling guy. I've talked about this before. I wasn't. I was when I was a kid. Then I was again during the Stone Cold Rock era. Like, for me, it was like 11th and 12th grade, maybe, or 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. Those, like, 3 years I was into it, and then I completely lost it for a long time. And my kids brought me back to it. We were just bored one day, and we decided, the Royal Rumble's today. Why don't we just, maybe the kids would like it. And they've, you know, it became their life for a while. They've waned on a little bit. But we watched a little bit before I sent them to bed of the WWE on Netflix, and they pulled out all the stops, man. Everybody was out there. The Rock opened up the show. And then, like, I don't know if you've seen it, I never thought, and maybe I'm being naive here, and I don't know, maybe he's been booed before, but they introduced Hulk Hogan, and he got booed out of the building. Now, I know it's in Los Angeles. I know, you know, maybe the political win there and his connection and, you know, stumping for Trump or whatever, but I would never have guessed the day that Hulk Hogan would come out to a WWE audience, 17,000 strong, and a bunch of famous people there too, including Bill Simmons was there. Ashton Kutcher was there. Macaulay Culkin. The great Macaulay Culkin was there, and he played it up to the audience. But The Undertaker came out. The Rock came out. Triple H opened up the show. They had, you know, a huge couple of big-time matches. They treated it almost like a pay-per-view event. This was like a big deal coming to Netflix, and, you know, the idea that it's all these people now and the entire world is watching as opposed to on USA Network. But Hulk Hogan comes out and is absolutely booed off the stage. I could not believe it. I never thought I'd see the day. And if it is political, that's silly. I don't care. Like, who cares who your favorite wrestler is voting for? It's Hulk Hogan. You're going to boo him because he made a speech for Trump? I don't know. Call me crazy. It's Hulk Hogan. He comes out to a WWE audience and gets booed off the stage. I was shocked. But it was actually, they did a good job with it. They brought out, the Undertaker came out on the badass version of the Undertaker on the motorcycle. Pulled out all the stops. It was fun to watch. I got to try and, I think the Royal Rumble is the beginning of February. That's the first thing we watched with my kids. So it'd be like a 2-year anniversary of watching with the boys. It's scary how much they, like now, and it's better because they're all into football. Like both of my sons now are, and my oldest certainly, is heavy into football. He's playing Madden. He knows all the players. Like we were watching the Red Zone or whatever, and forget who it was, but like a defensive back on Atlanta made a play. And like he knew who it was immediately. He's like, yeah, I played with Atlanta the other day. I'm like, okay, cool. Like he knows all the players. Like he's really into football. He was into fantasy football, and the wrestling has waned. And I'd rather have that. And he's into baseball. And actually for my birthday, which was late December, they bought me we went to a couple of ballparks this past summer. We went to Baltimore and obviously Yankee and Citi Field and stuff. So, but we went to Baltimore and we had plans to do it again. So they bought me like one of those, you know, travel pack, that like travel board. It's like a picture of the United States with all the ballparks and the little things. You fill them up every time you go see a new ballpark, whatever. The McMonagle family baseball trip or whatever. I forget exactly what it says. I should remember it, but it's like a wooden sketching of framed wooden sketching, and you add a little baseball to every ballpark. Now I was like, okay, well, there's already a couple problems. Coliseum doesn't exist anymore,
right?
And Tropicana Field doesn't exist anymore. So we'll see if they build another stadium in Tampa. I think they're going to, but I've already got two that aren't going to exist anymore, but we'll see. But I'm looking forward to it. But so it's cool that they're into baseball, but it is scary how quickly things change. And it just makes you feel like, man, it was just like, it was 6 months ago. He was at the bus stop talking to like one of my buddies who's another father of one of the kids who go to school, and we're waiting at the bus stop, and he's kind of into wrestling a little bit, and he's talking about it. And my son, which, you know, is literally like, man, he's all, wrestling is my life. Like, he literally said that, and now, oh, guys, come on, Raw. It's the first Raw on Netflix. They'll probably make a big deal out of it. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, we'll watch it. And we watched the pay-per-view events, but it was like Monday night was like, we had anything. Please, let me stay up. Please, we got to watch Raw. Oh, please, please. And now it's like, you know, And now they're all about football. So it's like, I prefer that, I suppose. I'm glad that they're getting into sports. But the idea that's like less than a year ago, it was his life. And now it's like, it's just makes you realize like, man, who knows what's next? Changes so fast. They're getting so big. This is why my wife was crazy about Christmas this year. Like this year, it was so important to have a good Christmas. I'm like, they're not going anywhere. Like, and even if they get older and like, you know, maybe some of the magic and the elf on the shelf goes away, or at least, you know, the belief in the magic of the elf on the shelf, and like, you know, maybe one of them gets wise to Santa Claus and how, you know, great he is. You know, Santa's real, of course, but maybe one of them, you know, catch on to that. Like, there's still going to be kids who love Christmas. Like, Christmas isn't going anywhere. But she was so determined on like,
the decorations, I joked about, the decorations came out the first week of November. Like, we were playing Christmas music ridiculously early throughout the house. Like, it was just, she was like gung-ho on making Christmas. I'm like, stop. I know wrestling went away. Christmas isn't going to go away. They're going to love getting presents forever. They're going to be 25 years old sitting around the Christmas tree waiting for gifts for us to give them. Like, stop.
And I love getting Christmas gifts.
Everyone loves getting Christmas gifts.
I'm 25. I still love Christmas.
See?
My opinion's never going to change about Christmas.
Right. But, you know, I think that played into it, the idea that things just change. Like cars, I mean, my son had all the little figurine cars. He would constantly ask us for this car, that car. Oh, you know, it's, Sonny and Chevrolet. We got to get both of them together. Like, you know, they have all the spoofs on people and everything. So, like, he was constantly asking us for the new car, and he would throw them all around the house and play with the cars. You know, he hasn't picked up a car in 2 years, but, like, that was his life. For like 6 months, it's all he ever did. We had to pack them up in his car's book bag and carry everywhere we went. He had to have the little cars with him. And now I don't even know where they are. They're probably in the basement somewhere. He hasn't picked them up in forever. But like, that was his entire life. And now wrestling was his entire life, and that's every once in a while. And for the Giants, winning used to be their entire life, and now it's like, okay, we can go 3-8. We can go 3-14 and keep the coach. That's called a transition. I'm not sure how well it worked. We'll get right back to the calls. 888-808-1019. Jesse in Queens. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, Chris. What's up? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I don't care. By the way, I am so against this. I'm going to go on the opposite of this. I don't care when you say Happy New Year to me. I don't care if it's the entire month of January. I don't care if it's February. Hell, I can always find a reason. Hit me up in March, and I'll say, oh, the new baseball season. Like, I don't care. People are so, like, definitive on these rules of, oh, it's time to stop saying Happy New Year. Is it that much of an inconvenience? Like, does it bother you so much to your core that if someone said Happy New Year to you in February, you'd be like, good God, man, what's wrong with you? Like, who cares? Say Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, whatever. I don't give a damn. People are crazy with this.
Yes, people are nuts. And the Giants are nuts. The Samara is nuts. Because it just seems like they don't care anymore. I mean, this franchise stood for winning, and they really tried to put a winning product, and now it seems they don't care.
I disagree with you. I think he cares deeply. I think he's been so battered, Jesse, by poor decisions that he doesn't want to make another one. And I think I honestly think that's it. I do think there are some points. Like, I do believe he thinks the coach had a great first year, not a good first year, because considering where they were for so many years, I mean, he won all those games. They won a road playoff game against one of the better coaches in the NFL right now, where there's talk he might get traded in O'Connell. But, I mean, they went out and won a road playoff game against, they win 12 or 13 games that year in Minnesota. And he felt like, wow, I have a great head coach. And I think he doesn't want to necessarily give up on that, even what he's seen the last 2 years. And I think you could sell, you know, Joe Shane on the last draft class. And I think it's just enough where he doesn't want to continue this every couple of years. I'm hiring someone else. And quite honestly, he's not been good at it.
You and I know it's going to be the same thing next year. I mean,
I know that.
You have good points, but they're not going to win. I mean, they were going to get the top pick and get the pick of the top quarterbacks.
Yes.
And they blew that.
Yes.
So they do everything the wrong way. This is my point.
I understand, but you heard the owner. The owner doesn't want to give up games. Like, I agree with you. I wish they treated that Colt game the same way they treated the Eagle game. I agree. They should have been going for it on 4th and 7s. They should have had Malik Nabers off the field in times in the second half. I know that sounds crazy and counterproductive, or, you know, tanking and giving up or whatever else. I don't care. They'd be in a so much better position right now if they had the first overall pick. So much of a better position. But we can't continue to harp on that. And to me, I think you're 100% wrong. I think John Mara cares deeply. Deeply. And I respect him. I respect him for his take on tanking. I do, even if it disagrees with my own. I respect the hell out of the guy. I think he loves this. This is his whole life. He's not, you know, he's not Steve Cohen with a hedge fund. Not that Steve Cohen doesn't love the Mets. I'm just saying, like, he didn't, you know, He's not Jerry Jones, who also was oil and gas, whatever. And by the way, speaking about Jerry Jones, have you seen, there's this new show called, was it Landman? I got to double check this. It was something like that. It's called Land something. Can you find, it's with Billy Bob Thornton, if you can look it up real quick.
Yeah, Landman.
Landman. Yeah. I guess it's a series on Paramount. It's about just like, you know, the oil business or whatever. And I saw Jerry Jones has, it's John Hamm and Billy Bob Thornton. And if you haven't seen it, it's making its way around the internet. Jerry Jones has like a little cameo where he talks about, and if you see it, John Hamm is like in a hospital bed. So something must have happened to him. He must have had a health scare, maybe a heart attack or something. But he's going through something. He's in the hospital. He doesn't look very good. But it's not like he's on his deathbed, but he just, you know, looks ill or something. But he's going through something medically. And Jimmy, and he has this, Jerry Jones has this scene about talking about how the importance of life and working with his kids and of all the different things that he's done, the success he's had in his oil and gas business, the success he's had of whether it be winning or, you know, making money with the Dallas Cowboys, whatever. He's proud of everything he's done, but he's the most proud, I saw a story today that he's not giving up the GM title, but he's most proud of working with his kids. And he talked about how working with his kids empowered his life, and at the end of your life, you're going to, you know, that those are the kind of things I'll remember, and I don't want to wait. I don't want to be there and feel like I didn't spend enough time with my family and not just on holidays. Like, I'm not kidding. Jerry Jones was freaking excellent. I was blown away with how good he was. If you haven't checked it out, you got to check it out. He is, he's unbelievable. It's, and he plays himself, obviously. He's talking about all the Cowboys and working with his kids. And this, like, it's incredible. I was blown away with how good he was. Shockingly good. Shockingly good. It's not just a cameo where he's at a party and someone goes, oh, hey, Jerry. And he goes, hey, what's going on? What's up with the quarterback position? I don't want to talk about it. Like, it was a legitimate, heartfelt, 4 or 5 minute monologue about the importance of family. It blew me away. If you haven't seen it, you got to go check it out. I saw Barstool post it. I don't know if I saw it through Barstool, but I saw Barstool talking about it. It is it's the best thing Jerry Jones has done in 10 years. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, it's the best thing Jerry Jones has done in 10 years. It is unbelievably good.
That's shocking. Just because Jerry Jones has said some pretty crazy stuff this year.
Yeah, and he's aging and he's has his moments. Oh, sure. You know, I mean, but like, I am not kidding. You have to go check it out. The clip is circulating. It's a show called Landman with Billy Bob Thornton and John Hamm. And he has a cameo where he does a legitimate scene, not just like a, you know, hey, how are you? I'm Jerry Jones. Nice to meet you. Like, for example, you know, Donald Trump is famous in Home Alone 2. Like, that's a normal cameo from a celebrity, or all the thousands of cameos in Entourage, you know, where they're at a party and it's like, oh, what's up? And you're like, no, this was a legitimate scene that he gives a 5 minute emotional speech about the importance of family and how the most rewarding part of his life has been the decision to work with his kids on a daily basis. I was floored how good he was. Floored. What an incredible job. So check that out if you haven't seen it. But, like, I think he cares. I think John Mara cares as deeply as any owner in the sport, any owner in all of professional sports. Like, he doesn't, this is his business, man. Same thing with Hal Steinbrenner. I mean, not that maybe they don't care as much the same. I think John Mara, I think John Mara cares as much or more about winning. I think it's easier to see that because they've lost more. The Yankees don't have, you know, the equivalent of 3-14 seasons. At least, you know, thankfully, Hal Steinbrenner hasn't had to deal with that. But this is what he does. That's the family business. The family business is the New York Giants for John Mara. He cares desperately. And I think he's finally been beaten down by his poor decision-making over the last years and how it's led to losing. But I thought he had a bad day. I feel for him. I respect him. I thought he had a terrible day. You've got to, in my opinion, even if you don't 100% believe it, and I'm not suggesting he lie to the fans and tell you it's great, or to quote, Keith, you know, to do something to you and call and say it's raining. Like, I get it. All right. No one wants to be lied to or blown smoke up their butt, but you've got to come out and show the fan base that you have more belief in this decision than he showed yesterday. If you're going to do this, and he talked about how the whole fan base is against it, I just felt like he needed to come out and give more reasons. He gave a couple, but I thought he should have given more faith in moving forward with this plan. I thought he should have given more faith in just the job that's been done already. Like, I know that's a hard sell, but at some point, I mean, show me something as opposed to, I mean, he literally said, I can't tell you they've done a good job. Like, or like, I don't know if we're going in the right direction, or like, and those are all reasonable takes. I'm not saying it's a crazy thought. And I get it. And I understand it, but like, some of the stuff, like, I would have been a little bit more forceful about how this is the right plan. Because if he doesn't believe in it, why are we doing it? Just to not have to make a decision? Because that doesn't seem like the right reason. Because I think you can make a case that he deserves a quarterback. That he had Daniel Jones forced upon him. Last year, Daniel Jones got hurt for half the year. They still managed to win games down the stretch and beat the Green Bay Packers with Tommy DeVito. A Green Bay Packer team that arguably could have been playing in the Super Bowl. That's how well they were playing down the stretch of the year and into the playoffs. This year was a complete disaster, and they had to punt on the season and give the quarterback away because they were afraid of locking into his contract. Like, and that's a contract the GM gave, absolutely. But like, you can say this team has had reasons why the coach failed. I still believe in him. The draft was good this year, and I believe in this team moving forward. I believe these are the right guys, and I have no doubt we're going to be better next year. And he didn't give you that. 888-808-1019, quick break update. Come back for 4 o'clock. Maybe a little bit of Yankees, as an interesting name has emerged over the last day or so of a possibility that next infielder the Yankees desperately need. 888-808-1019. It is Yankee Hot Stove after all at 4 o'clock. So we'll do that as we get you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan.